So this is a recap. Mishnah 1. Esrim v'shtayim ois yois yisod. 22 foundation letters. Letters of yisod. Sholosh imois, three mothers, v'sheva kufulois, and seven doubles, v'shtem esri pshutois, and 12 simple letters. So the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet are divided into three sets. There's three mother letters, which we'll be talking about, that are Aleph, Mem, and Shin, seven double letters, and 12. So the double letters are letters that if you have a dot inside them, it changes the way that they are pronounced, like a bet without a dot is a vet, a pay without a dot in it is a fey, so the dot makes the sound hard. And there are seven of those double letters. And then there are 12 simple letters. And in the diagram of the Tree of Life, of the 10 Sefirot, if you can imagine a picture of that diagram, you will see three horizontal lines. The line between Chochmah and Bina, between Chesed and Gevurah, and between Netzach and Hod. Those are the three horizontal lines, and they represent the three mothers. And there are seven vertical lines, and they're the seven double letters, and then there are 12 diagonal lines, and those are the simple letters. Three mothers, Sholosh Imois Aleph Mem Shin. The three mother letters are Aleph, Mem, and Shin, Yesoidon Kaf Zechus VeKaf Choiva, and they are founded in the pan of credit and the pan of debit. So if you imagine a pair of scales, those are old-fashioned hanging scales where you have two pans hanging by chains, and in the middle there's like a little hinge with a fulcrum and something that looks like a tongue. And depending on what the weights are, whether it's balanced or imbalanced, you have on one side the Aleph, on one side the Mem, on one side the Shin, and in the middle the Aleph. So if you imagine the human body as being split up into three, you have the head on top, and you have the abdomen at the bottom, and in the middle you have the thorax, you have the cardiovascular system. So the middle, the heart, would be the Aleph, the stomach, the abdomen would be the Mem, and the head would be the Shin. And the Mishnah goes on to say, V'lashon chok machriya bintayim. So you have the scales where you have the pan of merit on one side, the pan of debit on the other side, and the tongue, which is makes a decree which side weighs more, which is how the balance is going to end up. Sholosh imois aleph mem shin, the three mother letters, aleph mem shin, mem doy memes, the mem, the letter mem, is silent. Shin shoyrekes, and the letter shin hisses. Aleph chok machriya bintayim, and the letter aleph is the sound that balances the mem and the shin. So again, if we look, as we're going to be seeing, the three elements of fire, air, and water that we were studying in the first chapter, we talked about ruach, and then ruach was the breath, and out of the breath came mayim, water, and out of water came esh, fire. These three are the basic elements of all of creation, and they are represented each by one of these three letters. Aleph is the ruach, and if you think of the shape of the letter aleph, it's open at the bottom and it's open at the top. And it's, well, originally, as we'll see in the next Mishnah, originally was actually shaped like the pair of scales, but then it sort of fell over onto its side, and now it has a top and a bottom. But it still maintains that openness from two directions. The mem represents water, and in fact, the Hebrew word for water has a mem at the beginning and a mem at the end. It's mayim. And then the shin represents fire, and in fact, shin is shaped sort of like fire. And the sound of the shin, the hiss is the sound of fire. So we'll move down to page 10. Note 12. The Mishnah talked about Chok Machria bin Taim, that you have the tongue that decrees, that decides in between the two, that balances, that shows how much balance there is. So, Pshutoy Muven Shiyesh Biyad Aloshin Koyach Lahachria. The simple way that it's understood is that the tongue, your tongue in your mouth, has the ability to be a deciding factor. It can decide the fate of that which hangs in the balance. So then the word machria would be an expression of forcing something to bow. Miloshen berach korea. As we talk about a knee bowing, we use that word korea. V'anachnu korim u'mishtachavim u'modim, we say in aleinu, we bow. And when you say that something is machria, that means that the letter aleph, which is in the middle, has the ability to force one side to bow. V'ushitas Rabbi Akiva, and this is how Rabbi Akiva understands the idea of the tongue that's in the center of the balance, that it isn't there to show or to point at what it thinks is the balance, but it is there to force the issue and decide. It's a decider, as we're going to see in the next chapter. We brise the Rabbi Shmuel Yud Gimel Midas Shatoyr and Edreshes Bam Nera Shiyesh B'Machlekes Tanoim. There's a brise called the brise of Rabbi Shmuel. It's a very early, like a medrash halacha, so that goes back to the 2nd century. And we know that there are principles whereby the Torah, we call them hermeneutical principles, principles whereby the Torah can, you know, the Torah is essentially a story, a narrative, and we are being asked to derive a law. How do you derive a law from a narrative? So the rabbis formulated certain rules with which they could approach the text and out of that decide what the text really means. So in the Brice of Rabbi Shmuel, he elucidates 13 hermeneutical principles which are used for the discovery of the Torah. So the final one of the 13 reads like this. Shnei ksuvim ha-makishim zeh zeh. If you have two verses that contradict one another, ad sheyovei ha-kusuv ha-shlishi v'yachriya b'neihem, you don't know what to do until the third verse comes along and is machriya. And there in the Mishnah, it uses that word machriya, which means to decide. So, ketzad, Rabbi Shmuel gives an example. Kusuv echad oimer v'yered Hashem al ha-sinai al-roshaha. One verse in the Torah tells us that God came down onto Mount Sinai, to the top of the mountain. Right? So God came down onto the mountain. And then there's another verse close by which says, Min ha-shamayim hishmiyachu es koilo liyasreko. God let you hear his voice from heaven to teach you a lesson. So there you have two verses that contradict one another. On the one hand, we're told that God came down on Mount Sinai. On the other hand, we're told that God spoke to us from heaven. So then comes the third verse, and he says, Ki min ha-shamayim dibarti imochem, I spoke to you from heaven. Melamed, Rabbi Shmuel says, so what does that come to teach us? Shehirchen HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shmei ha-shamayim elyonim al ha-sinai v'dibir imochem. That God brought heaven down to earth. And so God sort of flattened the heaven and brought it to rest on top of the mountain. And so there's no real contradiction. Yes, God came down on the mountain. And yes, God spoke to us from heaven, because heaven was now on top of the mountain. It was no longer where it had been previously. And that is how Rabbi Yishmael understands the rule of Machria. You have two verses, and then you bring a third verse that sort of reconciles. There's a reconciliation. So then the word hachra'ah doesn't mean to force the issue. It means to balance or to reconcile the issue. It makes peace between what we thought of as opposites and contradictions. Not that it forces and says, well, I'm deciding one side is right and the other side is wrong. Ulam divrei Rabbi Akiva enam matimim lepirush zeh. But from what I've learned, Rabbi Akiva doesn't agree that that's the meaning. De'isa b'mechilta, we learn in the Mechilta like this. Rabbi Akiva says, Kosev echot oimer v'zavachto Pesach l'shem. There's a verse that says, you slaughter the carbon Pesach, the Paschal offering to God. Tzoynu boka, sheep and cattle. The Kosev echot oimer. And another verse says, Minaksovim u'minaizim, from the sheep and the goats. Tikochu, you should take. So now we have two contradictory verses. On the one hand, we have a verse that says you can bring the Paschal offering from the sheep and the cattle, and cattle means cows, right? And another verse that says sheep and goats, which we all know that the Paschal is a lamb, whether it's a kid of a goat or a kid of a sheep, but we don't use cattle. But the verse said, bring an offering for the Pesach from the lamb or the cattle. So there we have two contradictory verses. So Rabbi Akiva said, "Ketzad yiskaimu shnei mikrois halalu." How do we sustain these two verses? Amre tzumidus b'toyra. This is the law. Shnei ksuvim. If you have two verses, zeh keneged zeh v'soyisrim zeh zeh, two verses that oppose one another and contradict one another. Ad shi yiskaimu b'mkoimam. We tell them, remain in your place. We won't learn anything from you till the third verse comes. V'yachria b'neim, and decides. Talmud Loimer, so then he brings, Rabbi Akiva says, there's a third verse. The third verse says, Mishchu ukru lechem tzoin lemishpachoyseichem, take yourselves a sheep for your household. V'shachtu ha-Pesach, and slaughter the Pesach. Tzoin le-Pesach v'lo yiboka le-Pesach. So you see that the law is that sheep can be used for Pesach and not cattle. From here we see that there's actually a really powerful difference between how the two sages of the Mishnah understand the idea of machria. Rabbi Yishmael understands it in a very peaceful way. We'll find a way of reconciling the verses by bringing another verse. Rabbi Akiva says, no, we will eliminate one verse by bringing another verse. And we're going to see, as Sefer Yetzirah develops, that Rabbi Akiva's way of looking at things becomes very, very important to his personal philosophical approach to Judaism. And just to give you an example, the Gemara says when Moshe came to heaven to receive the Torah, he saw God tying little crowns to the Hebrew letters. And he said to God, who is forcing you to tie these letters that we call tagin? Like little, certain of the Hebrew letters have like a little crown made of three little spokes that stick up. So God says to Moshe, it's Rabbi Akiva who's going to be born in many generations from now, and he learns these laws, and he's got so many laws that he needs to learn that he needs these little tagin on top of the letters so that he can be doresh them, so that he can use them as part of his exegesis of the Torah. So Moshe says, if that case, why, if he's so smart, Why are you giving me the Torah, to give to the Jewish people? Why give it to Rabbi Akiva and tell him to give it to the Jewish people? So God says to him, be quiet. It's not your business to ask such a question. This is how it arose in the thought. You're going to be the one to give the Torah. The idea of a little black point that comes up from the top of the letter and forces God, and Moshe Rabbeinu actually uses the word machria. Mimachria, or Mimaakev, who's forcing you? And because Rabbi Akiva's approach is one of not reconciliation, but forcing the issue. And we're going to see that this distinction and how we read the idea of machria, whether it's a reconciliation or whether it's a forcing the issue, becomes more important as the Sefer Yetzirah continues. Let's look at the next note. Mem de memes, note 13. The mem is silent. Last week we were talking about the three personalities that are represented by these three letters. So the letter mem, which we said is associated with water, is part of the personality of the matriarch Miriam. And it was in her merit that we had the Be'er Shel Miriam, we had the well of Miriam that followed us through the desert for 40 years, and we drank, all the Jewish people drank from it, and it was only after Miriam died that there was no water for the congregation, and Moshe was told to speak to the rock, and then he hit it, and there was that drama that followed, but that only followed the death of Miriam. And the Gemara says, and this is our tradition, that for 40 years we drank water in the merit of Miriam. And you know, one of the things that we've been learning, and it comes out of the Ishbitzer Torah that we've been learning all these years, is that water is a metaphor for desire, because it's the very first thing that we desire after we're born. And that Miriam, in fact, had this tremendous desire. And it wasn't just water that Miriam bestowed on us with her presence and her life, but in fact, when we hung out with Miriam, we became so thirsty. I mean, can you imagine somebody who is so thirsty that when they walk on the sand in the desert, water comes bubbling up around their feet, right? That was Miriam, right? Miriam had such a powerful thirst that she could draw the water up around her feet, and that is a metaphor. Miriam really wanted the Torah, and so Miriam was the one who was able to draw the Torah from Moshe the way that she drew the water out of the sand. And when we hang out with Miriam, we became thirsty for the Torah as well. And so after hanging out with Miriam, we would go running to Moshe and say, teach us some more, teach us some more. And when Miriam died, we lost that thirst. And so we were no longer able to go to Moshe and drag the fresh Torah out of him. So Miriam is associated with the letter Mem. Bechinas Miriam, Bechinas Mayim. Shemibe'eiro shosu b'nei Yisrael Mayim arboim shana b'amidbar. It was from her well that the Jewish people drank 40 years in the wilderness. And see, v'ayin le'el perik aleph m'psicha le'mishnah yud. If you go back to the previous chapter and the preface to Mishnah 10, she'inyan ha'mayim hilishmoy ma'amad. One of the things, one of the aspects of water that we talked about is that it preserves the status quo. Water, when left alone, remains still. And when the heat leaves it, it actually becomes a solid, it becomes ice. V'zeh soid chet Miriam, and this is the secret of Miriam's sin that is talked about in the Torah, shebikshu lishmoyer ha-ma'amad b'nisuyei achecho Moshe, that she tried to preserve the status quo in the marriage of her brother Moshe to Tzipora. And this is something that she tried to do as a child. She tried to preserve the status quo in the marriage of her mother and father, Amram and Yocheved, and they tried to divorce one another, and Miriam stepped in and said, no, you have to stay married. And this came out of that other aspect of water, which is that it is the preservative. And Miriam was also trying to preserve the marriage of all the people who had divorced when they saw that Miriam and Yocheved had divorced after Pharaoh had decreed that all the boys who would be born would be thrown into the river. Kedis b'medrash, as we learn in the Medrash. Be'inyan mem ha'dimemes, and the idea of the silent, the mute, mem, matzonu b'parshas b'haloischo, we find it in the Medrash in b'haloischo. It says, v'yichar af Hashem bom. God was angry with them. You know the story that Moshe had divorced his wife Tzipora, and Aaron and Miriam were talking about Moshe, and they said, "Ach, afpa Moshe, is it only Moshe who's a prophet? You know, God spoke to us also. We lead a perfectly normal, sane, married life. You know, why can't Moshe be married, right?" When God rebuked her, we don't find that she answered back, Right? She is mute. Va'af al pikein, nevertheless, Leidonos HaKadosh Baruch Hu Likavzchus, in the sake of Miriam, what do we find? That God finds her guilty. V'nirshem olehu charoin af, and we find in the Torah it says God was angry with her, and v'nenshem b'tzaras, she was punished with leprosy. So obviously Miriam finds herself in the pan of debt. The next one that we have in the Mishnah is Shin Shurekes. We have the Shin that hisses. And we said that Shin represents our mother Chava, our mother Eve, who is the element of fire, which is all about change. Back at the previous chapter, in the preface to Mishnah 11, we talked about the idea of the status quo and the dynamic of change. That the whole point of fire as an element, when we talk about fire as an element, we don't mean, you know, the smoke and the logs. That's not what God uses to create. It's a metaphor. Fire, the element of fire, means that dynamic that operates in the universe to change things against their will. The inyan shin shirekes, and the idea of the word, the idea of the shape and the name of the letter shin, and the word shirekes, which we translate as hissing, comes from a pasuk vayatehu shirek, and he planted him shirek. So, when you plant a vine, it grows in the shape of a letter shin, and Rashi says shirek there means these really the highest quality vine that God planted us, the Jewish people, like a vine. And the shoreik is the one that is, you know, it's given the lattice on which to climb and so on, and it climbs in the shape of the letter shin. If you look at in Genesis, when Joseph is in prison, then there's the chief butler and the chief baker of Pharaoh, and they both have dreams. And the chief butler dreams of three vines, and he calls them sarigim, which is very close to the word sharik. And so there again you have this image of the three prongs growing upwards, which is how the shape of the letter is. So we say that the letter shin represents chav, represents Eve. What do we find when Eve sinned? God says to her, "Vayom Hashem le'ishem malzoi susis." What did you do? So, unlike Miriam, who says nothing, Chava answers back, and she says, "Vatoimer ha'ish hanocha shisyani." It's the serpent that confused me and seduced me and got me to eat of the tree of knowledge. Shakurish Bochu Sholo Bikash Mimenu, God's asking Chava, Lama Achaltu, why did you eat? So she answers, she speaks up for herself. And obviously we find that God, he bends or he decides the justice or the judgment of Chava, that she's gonna be in the pan of merit. Because even though we find that she gets some sort of a punishment, God says you're going to go through travail before you can give birth. Nevertheless, we don't find that God was angry. It doesn't say that God was angry with her. As we find with Miriam, it says that God was angry. And it was in the merit of Chava that women were commanded with the three mitzvahs of Chala, Nido, and Hadlokas Haner. Right, so in the Mishnah, one of the things that we were talking about in the preface to this chapter is that Eve, according to the Medrash, Eve committed this terrible sin of giving Adam to eat from the tree of knowledge, and yet we have a tradition that because of that, women are given the three commandments. One, to take challah, that is to take a tithe from any dough that they're baking, and the other is to light the Shabbos candles, and the other is to keep the laws of Nida. And the question that we asked is, surely if somebody does a sin, then they don't get a punishment that's a mitzvah, right? If women are given these three mitzvahs that men are not given, then they're mitzvahs. By definition, they're a reward. You know, we have a rule in the Mishnah, sechar mitzvah mitzvah, that the reward for doing a mitzvah is another mitzvah. Sechar avera avera, and the reward for doing a sin is another sin. Mitzvah gereres mitzvah, because one mitzvah pulls another mitzvah behind it. Avera gereres avera. So how can we argue that Chava, that Eve did a terrible sin, if then she is given these three mitzvahs? And so last week we talked, or rather 2 weeks ago, we talked about how, what was the rationale behind Chava doing what she was doing. And the bottom line underneath the rationale is that the instruction that Eve has is to disobey her instructions. And that is the element of fire. That's the meaning of the element of Esh and the Shin, which is Shirekes, which hisses. And its instruction is a dynamic one. On the one hand, on the right hand side, you have water, which will just stay in one place and preserve the status quo. On the other side, you have fire, whose sole purpose and meaning is change. And since Chava, since our mother Eve, is the embodiment of the element of fire and the Shin, so she brings about change. And even though it appears that she's disobedient, but in fact she's obeying the meta instruction, which is to introduce change and dynamism into every situation. And if you read the story of Genesis like in a really simplistic way, then you know she's a mesis umediach. Then Chava, then Eve comes across as someone who not only sins but makes other people sin, for which we have like a really strict category in the Talmud that there's no good thing could come of that. So, and since we see that she gets rewarded with these mitzvahs, so obviously the story is not as to be read as simplistically. Then, actually I finish off here by saying, and this is at the top of page 10, Yikar mechochme mikovoid sichlus ma'at. And this is a thing that we've learned in the Ishbitz many times, and it's a new reading of a verse in Ecclesiastes. The first verse in the 10th chapter, it says, Zvuvei moves yavish bia shemen rekech, a few little dead flies can spoil the perfume. Right? You can have a big barrel of perfume, but you get some dead insects in it and it can spoil the chemistry of this whole big barrel of perfume and destroy it. And then the second part of the verse is, Yikar mechochme mekovoid, more weighty than wisdom and honor, sichlus ma'at is a little stupidity. And usually, the way traditionally that the commentators have read this is to compare the first part of the verse with the last, as just as some insects, a few little insects can spoil the whole gallon of perfume, so a little stupidity can spoil a lot of wisdom. But the Ishbitz reads it differently. He says, Yikar means more precious, doesn't mean more weighty, doesn't mean more grievous, it means more precious. And sometimes a little stupidity is more precious than a lot of wisdom. And that's how he understood the story of Miriam and Aaron, that they allowed themselves to be stupid a little bit, because that's what God needed from them at that time, to be able to point to the greatness of Moshe. Miriam and Aaron had to allow themselves to be vanquished and diminished. And that is exactly what was happening with our mother Eve when she went ahead and gave and ate from the tree of knowledge and gave the rest to Adam. She was also practicing a little stupidity, which in its time is more precious than wisdom. And then the third one, the third letter, and here we are on note number 15, Aleph Chok Machria, and the third one is the letter Aleph, which is that which tips the scales, and we said that the Aleph is Bechinas Sora, that's the embodiment of our mother Sarah. Bechinas Ruach, and she's the embodiment of the idea of the spirit. And there again we find Vatchachesh Sora Lemar, Sora contradicts God, right? God says to Abraham, why did Sora laugh, saying, ooh, I'm too old, how could I have a baby? Could there be such a thing? Is anything too difficult for God? And Sora's listening and she's afraid and she says, no, I didn't say that. So Shehakadosh Baruch Hu Lo Shal LeSora Ela Lavra. We really find here is a very strange description of events. It says that Sora denied having said that, but you know, God never actually spoke to Sora. God spoke to Avraham, saying, why did Sora da 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 da? Sora denies it, and God says, no, but you did laugh, right? So there isn't actually a dialogue going on between God and Sora, it's going on between God and Avraham. He says, Lama tzochka Sora lema, why did Sora laugh, saying, etc. Vihi hechnisa etz atzma letoy chasicha b'li azman. And Sora like introduces herself into the discussion that's going on between Avraham and God, and nobody invited her. V'afal piken, nevertheless, donos HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'kaf zechus. So God puts her in the pan of merit too. Upiresh devareho, and God interprets her words, shekavanos la'atzma, that when she said, oh, how can I have a baby? My husband is so old. God reinterprets it to be, Sarah said, how can I have a baby? I'm so old. And God actually changes things so as not to embarrass Sarah in front of her husband. And God interprets it so as it doesn't sound as though Sarah is actually contradicting God and saying, well, you know, God can't do such great miracles. And we don't find that it doesn't say God was angry. The kosher. So now and also we don't find that she was punished for contradicting and lying, right? The kosher. So the question is this, Lom Om HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al Sora, why did God say about Sarah, Sha'amra ha'af umnam eled vani zakanti, that Sarah said, how can I give a child? How can I get pregnant anymore? I'm so old. Why did God say that when Sarah didn't actually say that? Vulei ha'shaloyma, so maybe you could say, Chok machriya ha'amura b'mishnasenu, when it says in our Mishnah that the Aleph has the power to force the issue, This is Sarah who introduces herself uninvited into a discussion that's going on between Avraham and God. And Sarah forces the issue and ends up forcing God to reinterpret her words. She also says shalom b'neim b'dvareho, and she makes peace with them. And with her words, she forces the issue and makes a new way of understanding. And perhaps when we have more time, we'll come back here and really examine this text closely. Let's go to Mishnah 2. Mishnah 2. Esrim Mishtaim Oisis Sisa, 22 foundation letters. Chokakon, Chotzvon, Shoklon, Tzorfon, Vehemiron. 22 foundation letters that God carved them, He hewed them, He weighed them, He refined them, and He substituted them. V'tzar bahen, and He shaped with them nefesh kala yitzir, the soul of every existing thing, v'chala osid lotzur, and everything that is going to be created. So, let us look at what we're going to be talking about. And this is the psicha, this is the preface, the Mishnah base to the second Mishnah. Achre hisbiroi techilas hoifuas shloish imois aleph memshin. After the first Mishnah outlined the idea of the three mother letters, ruach maim ve'esh, air, water, and fire, shehem k'moichoy megelem v'yisoid kolabriya, because they are the basic material from which everything is created. So now the Mishnah goes back to the beginning. Umachiv bir ois aleph, and we're going to be looking at the letter aleph. Shehu b'chinas ruach, which the letter aleph is itself a paradigm of the idea of the ruach breath, as we said back in the previous chapter in the ninth Mishnah. We said there, shtayim, the first stage was ruach, the second stage was ruach meruach. The very first idea of creation is that God has breath. And the second idea is that God breathes out that breath, and that creates the whole universe. Like God goes, the letter He, and out comes this breath, and from the breath comes the moisture, and from the moisture comes the heat. Chokak v'chotzav bo esrim v'shtayim ois yisod. And then in those, or with those, God created these 22 letters. Ois aleph, the letter aleph, hu halev leguf chuf beis oisis. The letter aleph is like the heart to the body of the 22 oisis, the 22 letters. Vois yud, and the letter yud, hi hatsura habsisi, it's the basic shape, this little yud shape, which is sort of like a paisley kind of shape. And we find this shape common in cultures all over the world, as sort of like the basic, most natural, self-shaping shape that, you know, natural things, plants, animals, and inanimate things tend to take this shape of their own accord. Like a shape like a droplet, right? So the letter Yud is shaped like a droplet, and it's the basic shape from which all the letters are made. But the basic letter from which all letters are made is the Aleph. And how is an aleph made? Hu yud vav yud, kaze. If you look at just above the note 16, at the end of the line, you'll see in parentheses a vav with a yud on either side of it. And I guess it takes a little imagination, but that's basically what an aleph is. Vuhu tzura meshulash. It's a triplicate. If you superimpose it on the tree of life, which is also a tree made of three columns, you can see that this is also three columns. There's the vav, which goes from top to bottom, and on either side of it are two yuds. Because the aleph represents God, who is the aleph of the world. The word aluf means a chief. Kedeisa boisis Rabbi Akiva, as we learn in the Medrash. Umashma came in Divrei Medrash. And the Medrash talks about God being the Aleph. And it says there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nikra Echad, God is called one. V'kriya Shmoi, and God's name is Oisiyos Mishuloshos, is in triplicate letters. U'minayin Shakadosh Baruch Hu Echad, how do we know that God is one? V'kol Shem V'shevach Shaloi in Koidin Lefonav Ela B'mishulosh, and every time we talk about God, we always talk about God in threes. It says, Shema Yisrael, hear, O Israel, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem. So if you think of Hashem Elokeinu Hashem as the two Shems are the two Yuds, and the Elokeinu is the Vav in the middle. V'hoyu Asholo Shema Yis Hashem Elokeinu Hashem K'mo Yitzures Ois Aleph, Dain Yud Vav Yud. V'ho'iku Hu L'das, the main thing is to know, Ki Ein Boi Shitvus V'ein Sheni Lo Yisbarach. The reason the Medrash talks about God in triplicate is because it's very important that we as Jews don't allow ourselves to go in for the idea of duality. Many religions that were contemporary with the birth of Judaism have very powerful philosophies of duality, like Zoroastrianism, where everything is split into good and bad, light and dark, fire and water, hot and cold. And we as Jews have resisted that. And part of the meaning of this Medrash, that God is always to be found in the triplicate, is that as soon as there is a plurality, we go for the three rather than the two. Ubeinyan Tzura Sa'ois, we're in the next paragraph. Hine Isa b'Masechta Megala Amukos. In the Sefer Megala Amukos, the Megala Amukos is one of the greatest Kabbalists of all time. He says, Yudua Shebebriyas HaOlam, everybody knows, I remember when my Rebbe Shlomo used to say, everybody knows, then you knew for certain that nobody had ever heard this was a fresh, brand new mystery that was being revealed. But the bigger the mystery it was, and the fewer people knew about it, the more it would be the assertion, everybody knows, right? Everybody knows Shabriyas Ha'olam Koidem Chet Shel Odom Arishon Hoyo Ha'alf B'Dmus Yud Vav Yud. Before the world went into decline, the Aleph had a different shape. It was shaped with an upright Vav and a Yud on either side. Ki Avav Ha'im Tzois Hoyse Zekufa Ka'omut, the middle Vav stood in a column. Ki Abes Yudin Ha'im Beisei Naim, because the two Yuds represent the two eyes of God. V'havav hu hachoitim, and the vav represents the nose of God. Besoid parts of Odom kishir koima, and the very early Kabbalah, even before the Kabbalah of the Ten Sefirot, there is a Kabbalah of shiur koima. And in the shiur koima, we're really talking about trying to have a picture of God using the image of a human being. And you know, you find all over the Torah the idea of God, you know, God's hands, God's eyes, God's... And so the early Kabbalists, I would say in the first few centuries of the Common Era, their Kabbalah was very different to ours, and most of the focus was on the Merkava, and the entry into the Merkava revolved around an imaginative depiction of God and the dimensions, so to speak, of God, the Shiur Koima. And so in the ideas of the Shiur Koima, the letters become, so to speak, the appendages of God. And so in God's face there is the Vav representing the nose, and there are the two Yuds representing the eyes, and that's the Aleph. And the two Yuds are associated with the verse Vayitzer Hashem Lekim Es Odom. It says God formed man, and in doing so the Pusuk, the verse, uses the word Vayitzer with two Yuds. And the Gemara says, well, it's called two Yuds because a man has two Yetzers. A man has two desires, the evil desire and the good desire. The Megal Amukah says that these two Yuds represent the two eyes, so to speak, of God, which are also connected with the two desires. Ula'achar shechot Adam Arishon, and after Adam Arishon, after Adam eats from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, nis'akim avav, the vav is then bent over onto its side, v'nasa hatmuna k'mo yud vav, k'mo yud, then we get a different picture of the slanting line, and a yud on top and a yud below. Here in the notes, I'm not sure if let's go. Let's learn some of these notes because they're so powerful. Let's look at this one. It's on page. It's note number 17. On page 13. Omer Rebbe Loza. Rebbe Loza said, Abba. So Rebbe Loza is the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is ostensibly the author of the Zohar and the leader of the school of the Kabbalists after the death of the generation that preceded him, and the death of the Ten Martyrs, and Rabbi Akiva, who was his Rebbe, and so on. So Elazar comes and tells his father this story. Yom Chad, Havina Ben Midrash. One day we were in the Beis HaMedrash, in the study hall, V'sheilu Chavrayu, and the Chevra, the brotherhood, the friends, we were asking each other, My new Omer Rabbi Akiva Talmudai, what was it that Rabbi Akiva meant when he told his students, Kishitagiu Lav Neshaish Torah, Al Toimu Mayim Mayim? There's a story in the Gemara, in the Masechta Chagiga, that Rabbi Akiva took three of his disciples with him, and they entered paradise. Before they went in, Rabbi Akiva warned them that when they reached the place of pure marble, that they shouldn't say water, water. Because if they do, they will be harmed because, and he quoted a verse at them, he said, Doivish korem la yochan neged eni, he who speaks untruths will not be able to stand in my presence, said God. And since there isn't water, water, if they say water, water, they'll be hurt. So, the Hebrew who are sitting there in the Beis Medrash with Rabbi Elozer Reb Shimon and his friends, they want to know what on earth did Rabbi Akiva mean. Adahochi, while they're talking, Ho Sabe de Sabin Kanochis. So the sage of sages, the elder of elders, presumably that's Eliyahu Hanavi, Elijah the prophet, comes down and he talks to them. Omeloin Rabbona, he says, Rebus, B'maiko Tishtalim, what are you working at? What's the problem? What's going on? Omrulay, so they say to him, Vadai Behai Domer of Akiva, we're really talking about the quote from Rabbi Akiva le Talmudoi to his disciples, Kishitakilav Neshai, when you get to that place of the pure marble. So the Sabbat de Sabin, the sage of sages, says to them, Omalain Vadai Rosa Iloisbach, there's definitely really a big, profound secret. And they were just learning about this in heaven, in the yeshiva. And because they were concerned lest you make mistakes and not understand it properly, so I was sent down from heaven. I was told to reveal this mystery among you. Because this is the highest mystery. Tamirum ibn Dora, and it's hidden. There's nobody here in this generation that you could ask, because nobody on earth alive knows what Rabbi Akiva meant. Bevadai avne shayish tohor inon. Obviously, these blocks or these pieces of this pure marble, deminhoin mayin dechuin nafkin, there's water flowing out of these pieces of marble. V'inun remizin ba'os aleph resha v'sofer. And the water that flows from this pure marble is hinted at in the letter aleph. Vav di'iu netoyu b'nayu. So you have this, the letter vav, which is a column between them. Iu etz chayim. This is the tree of life. Man de'ocha minei chayil v'olam. Whoever eats from the tree of life is going to live forever. Ve'ilen bes yudin, now these two yuds that are on the side of the vav, inun remizin b'vayitze, these are hinted at in that verse that we talked about earlier, where it says that God formed man, and in the word vayitze there are two yuds. Ve'inun tretze yitziris, and these are the two formations. Yitzira de Eloin, the formation of the above, ve'yitzira de tatoin, the formation of those below. V'inun chachme b'roish v'chachme b'soif. We know that the letter Yud, in the name of God, Yud Kei Vov Kei, refers to the sphere of chachma. So there are two kinds of chachma. There's a chachma ilo'o, there's a supernal wisdom, and there's a chachma tator, and that's the kind of wisdom that we know. Ta'alumo is chachma. And these are the hidden secrets buried in wisdom. Vadai inen talumis mechachma ilo, the trois kese ilo. And so the chachma ilo, the supernal wisdom that we're talking about, which is hinted at in the right hand yud of the letter aleph, this is connected to the supernal keter. V'inun lekabu beis einen, and this they correspond to the two eyes. D'bohoin trein d'moin. Now listen, this is where the Zohar goes off in a new direction. He says, What's the meaning of the two eyes? What does it mean that God has two eyes? The b'hoin trein dimoin. In each eye there is a tear. Noch su b'yoyim rab. And these tears, they fall on the great day. V'amai noch su. Why do they fall? Begin do iraisa mitrein luchin elon. Because when Rabbi Akiva was talking about they're going to reach the place of this pure marble, it wasn't just any stone. It was the marble from which Moshe Rabbeinu took the stone to hew out the tablets of the Ten Commandments. So it is out of this stone that water is flowing, meaning that water is the Torah. Begin the Oraisa Mitrein Luchin Ilin, because the Torah comes from these two tablets. Have a Moshe Nochis Liyisrael, that Moshe is giving to the Jewish people, V'loi Zochu Bohin. And the Yidden, they don't deserve, they're not ready for these tablets of stone which pour out this pure water. V'itberu V'noflu, and then these two tablets of pure white marble get broken and they fall to the ground. And so the two temples, the first temple corresponds to one of the stones, and the second temple corresponds to the other stone, and they too break and fall. Why do they fall? Begin the Porach Vov Minayu, because the Vov that was in the middle, now getting back to the shape of the Aleph, right? So you have a Vov in the middle that is supporting, it's like the scales that we talked about, right? When you have the pan on one side, the pan on the other, and then you have this middle column. So the Vav is the middle column. The Vav flew away. The Ihu Vav Dvayitzer. So we have a medrash that when Moshe Rabbeinu came down the mountain and he saw the Jewish people worshipping the golden calf, the letters started to fly out of the stone of the tablets that he was carrying, and they became heavier and heavier to the point where he couldn't hold them anymore, because before that they had consisted mostly of empty space, because God had written into the tablets of stone, and so they were just a shell. But now that the letters were flying back up to heaven, so the stone becomes heavier until Moshe can't carry it and he drops it. So what's the letter that flies out, says the Zohar? It's the letter Vav. So then God gives Moshe another set of tablets, which is it's no longer from the tree of knowledge, now from the tree of life. Now already these tablets are connected to the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So now the Torah that we have, that we're given today, it's like, you can't do this, you must do this, don't do that, that's kosher, that's not kosher, that's treif, that's osur, that's punishable by this. The original Torah wasn't supposed to be that way. But the Torah that we're given, which is this second-hand Torah, it's the Torah of the broken luchos, that has a whole different shape, right? In other words, it's the vav that held together the two yuds is now being replaced by this crooked thing. And you have one yud above and one yud below, and that's not how it was supposed to be. They were supposed to be side by side. Mimin achaya, on the right hand side you have life. Umismoyle moise, now on the left you have death. Ubigindo omer Akiva le Talmudoy. So now let's come back, says this a sage of sages to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says to his students, when you get when you reach the place of the pure marble, don't say water, water. Don't weigh these stones. Don't look at these two yuds and say to yourself, an upper and a lower. And then say, you know, these are, well, you know, these stones have been changed for other stones. The Inun Chayim Moise. Now it's no longer about wisdom and wisdom. Now it's about life and death. And the Tamon Leiv Chocham Yeminoi V'Leiv Chsil Lismoiloi. Because we learn that the wise man, he's led by the left, the right hand side of his heart, and the fool is being led by the left hand side of his heart. And if you do that, says Rabbi Akiva, tistaknun gamach, you will endanger yourself. Why? And here's the secret. Begin the ilin, the eitz hadas toivra inin bepirud. Because when we're talking about the luchos, the commandments that come on the stones that came connected to the tree of knowledge and good and evil, they're split. Va'avnei shayish tahor. And this, when you go into paradise and you see these stones, these beautiful stones, they're not split. Inim biyichuda, they're united. In other words, when you go into paradise, you get a chance to look at the original luchot, the original tablets. Don't confuse them with the second set of tablets. The second set of tablets have the split built into them. But the first set of tablets, they are in a unity. They represent the Aleph when it stands upright with the Yud on either side. And if you make the mistake of thinking that those original tablets are gone, they're broken. Moshe brought them down, they're broken, they're gone. What we have now is this other, then you get into great danger, because God says the speaker of lies has no way to stand in my presence. Because when you get into paradise, there's no split. Rabbi Akiva was taking his students backwards in time to the place. What does it mean to go into paradise? It means to go back to the place where everything is fixed. Or, in other words, to go back to the place where there never was a split, where Adam and Chava never ate from the tree of knowledge, and where the Jewish people never worshipped the golden calf, and Moshe never broke the tablets. And when you're connected there, then you're in the world of Chochma Ilo'o, of the supernal wisdom. And in that place is, that's the meaning of paradise. And of course we know the story that only Rabbi Akiva came out unharmed. Ben Azai died, Ben Zoibim went mad, and Elisha ben Avuya, who was perhaps the most favored of all the disciples, he turned into an apostate and he was no longer considered a kosher Jew. So I guess I brought this just as an example. When we're learning Sefer Yetzirah, people have been here before us, and what they have to say about the letters, it's mind-blowing. It's so beautiful. And it will take us right back to really where we want to go. When we're studying the Kabbalah, we don't want to know the techniques of meditation and visualizations, and we want to know who we are. And what this is telling us is that each of us inside us, we have the unbroken tablets. We are still, there's part of us which still has access to paradise. The thing is, we must get beyond the split. We must get beyond the idea that we're living in a world of irreconcilable opposites of good and evil and so on. And we have to get back to that place which is that purity inside us that is still connected to the Mayim Tchuyim, to the clear water that flows from those original stones, rather than the two tears that are in the eyes after the break.